Syria's president has dashed hopes of lifting the state of emergency there, which has been in place in Syria for almost half a century. In a much-anticipated speech to the parliament in Damascus, President Bashar al-Assad gave no heart to the growing anti-government movement.
The most Syrian people is calling for reforms. You are all reformers. Syrian people have demands that have not been met. We discussed this and we agreed that we haven't actually achieved and met a great number of demands from Syrian people. However, events have progressed differently. They used these reforms as cover. And people were duped to go to the streets. Some of them had good intentions.
He talked reform, but nothing was changed. Instead, the president accused foreign conspirators of orchestrating the unrest that was evidenced over the last 2 weeks. There are now reports of gunfire in the port city of Latakia as hundreds of protesters in the country's deeply divided society voiced their anger at their president's speech. Joshua Landis has been covering Syria for the past 30 years. He's the director of Middle East Studies at the University of Oklahoma, and he writes a blog that's called Syria Comment, one which has been flooded with disappointed reactions from Syrians since that speech. I spoke with Joshua Landis earlier this morning.
My inbox and the comment section on my blog has just been off the scales with Syrians calling in saying how distressed they are and how he's not a reformer and disappointed. On the other hand, Bashar al-Assad painted this in a very different way. He said the nation really has only two options, stability and security, which is sticking by the state, or civil war, and that the outside world is trying to get us. George Bush tried to get us in 2003. International community came after us after the death of Rafiq Hariri, the Lebanese prime minister, blaming us for killing him. The Israelis attacked Lebanon and Hezbollah in 2006. We've withstood each of these great trials, and this is another one. Syrians must stand together, he said. We want to reform, we're going to reform, but national security comes first.
It's sort of a mixed message, isn't it? I mean, and that message the outside world is trying to get us is one that we have heard from various leaders in the last few months of these uprisings in the region. So on the one hand, he's saying, you know, the world is out to get us. He's also saying reforms are needed. How do those two messages work together?
He's trying to walk a very delicate line. And Syria is not Libya. When Gaddafi said, you know, Al-Qaeda is after us and this is a big foreign conspiracy, everybody laughed at him. They don't believe it. But in Syria, the situation is quite different. There are 1 million Iraqi refugees in Syria. They are a cautionary tale to regime change gone wrong. On the other border with Syria is Lebanon, which fell into civil war for 15 years. Hundreds of thousands of people forced to leave, others dead. Syria is a multi-ethnic, multi-confessional, multi-religious society. It's not like Egypt and Tunisia. Those are not the operative comparisons where society stood as one, the military sided with the people, they turned their backs on dictators. Syria is a deeply divided society, like Iraq, like Lebanon.
When you say it's a deeply divided society, divided under along what fault line? Where is
the division? The president is an Alawite, which is a heterodox Shiite sect. 12% of Syrians are Alawites. The military leadership is made up of Alawites who are close to the president. The military is not going to abandon the president, and it hasn't abandoned the president. Christians, 10% of Syria, they support the Alawites and the Bashar al-Assad and the Ba'ath Party, because they stand for secularism. And many Syrians, Christian Syrians, have gotten themselves into a frenzy of fear about Al-Qaeda and about Muslim Brotherhood, and that they could be driven out of Syria if there's chaos or civil war. And after all, the Christians of Iraq were driven out, and many of them have fled the country because once George Bush toppled the Ba'athist regime in Iraq, Islamic groups grew up. And they fed on the Christians. They attacked Christians, kidnapped them, and so forth. So they were the weakest people in society. They were driven out. So the Christians support. Now, that leaves 65% Sunni Arabs. Of course, there's 10% Sunni Kurds, but that's an ethnic division. But the 65% Sunni Arabs are divided as well between rich and poor, between those who fear civil war and those who believe that it's time for change and they want an end to this government. So Syria is not united behind one vision of the future.
So this explains why last week there were mobs on the street, which is, you know, not a common event in Syria, demanding change, a time for change. And this week there were tens of thousands of people on the street in support of the government.
Absolutely. And the opposition, it's important to remind people that the opposition has worked hard and they got people to demonstrate, but they were not big demonstrations. In Deraa, this forlorn, poor agricultural region in the south, the demonstrations spread, and there were 15 school children who were arrested for writing graffiti on the walls, anti-government graffiti. They were arrested, and the tribal leaders, as a tribal region, came out and demanded their release, and this led to demonstrations and then shooting on the people, and a number of mistakes were made, 60, 70 people killed, and big demonstrations. But those demonstrations did not spread into the cities the way they did in Egypt, Tunisia. There were scattered demonstrations in the cities, but nothing like we saw elsewhere. And Bashar al-Assad yesterday, before the speech, called for big pro-government demonstrations. Over a million people came out. These were the biggest demonstrations we've seen in Syria in decades. And they were pro-government. And in a sense, today's speech, he had the confidence to stand up and, in a sense, show to the Syrian people, I have won this battle, at least this chapter of the battle. And he told the demonstrators and the opposition, if you go against me, you're not going against the state, you're going against the nation. That's what he said. And he laid down the gauntlet and said, we're not going to be like Libya with NATO planes overflying us. We're not going to be like Iraq with foreign powers in the country. And that's the stark message that he laid out for the country. It's either moi or it's chaos and civil war.
And was he threatening his people when he said, we don't seek battles, but if a battle is imposed on us today, we welcome it? Was that a threat to his people or was that a threat to what he was painting there as the outside threat?
Well, the opposition would say it's a threat to his people. Supporters of the regime would say it's a threat to the opposition that wants to make trouble in the country. I mean, this is the problem. I wish I could say there is one simple answer for this, but there's not, because Syrians are deeply divided.
There had been great expectations from this speech from the president, expectations that have been fueled over the past week, suggestions he was going to lift the state of emergency that's been in place there for 4 decades. He didn't do that. Why do you think he didn't? What was that managing of expectations about, in your view?
Well, you know, he said, look, everybody's demanding something from me, and we're going to do it. We're going to reform, but we're going to do it at our own pace. Our priorities have had to be changed because we've got this national security challenge. And he said, we are moving ahead with lifting this national security law and in a new party law. Now, of course, both of those have been under study for years now.
And Joshua, just finally, already some opposition voices have said, well, we're not going to be scared off. We will go back onto the streets. But can you give us a sense of this opposition movement? Is it like in the other countries where it has been fueled or populated mainly by young people? Are these Facebook revolutionaries, as they've become called, or something?
Well, they are. You know, to a large extent, they are. In Tunisia, we saw this grassroots movement that just overthrew them in days. In Egypt, there was a grassroots movement, but it was also coordinated by Facebook, by YouTube, by Al Jazeera effect, which was monstrous. Now that, in Syria, is a much larger part of this. And they've been trying to, push these winds of change into Syria and get the people behind this Facebook revolution. Many Syrians, millions, live abroad, and they've been driving this to a certain degree. From Washington, from London, other capitals. But so far, they have been unable to get the demonstrators in the cities, in the urban centers, to be massive. And there have been scattered demonstrations in the cities. But that'll be the big challenge. If on Friday they can get people to storm into the streets and overwhelm the army and security forces and take over the country, they may win. But Bashar al-Assad has laid down the gauntlet and said that's not going to happen.
Joshua Landis, thank you very much for joining us on Breakfast.
It's my pleasure.
Joshua Landis is Director of Middle East Studies at the University of Oklahoma and coordinator and writer of a blog called Syria Comment. It's 8:16.